Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, this is Dennis Stratton, original guitarist from Iron Maiden, and you're listening to Talking Metal. Rock and roll, mate.
Hulu Plus is a great way to binge watch your favorite shows. Hulu Plus has tons of episodes from comedies like SNL, Community, Modern Family, South Park, Family Guy, and thousands of other shows. Hulu Plus is only $7.99 a month. That's $7.99 for all the shows and movies you can watch. Catch up on current shows, binge on an old favorite, or catch a great movie. You can do it all on Hulu Plus. Right now, you can try Hulu Plus for a couple weeks for free on us when you go to HuluPlus.com/metal or when you go to TalkingMetal.com and click on the Hulu Plus banner. Please make sure you use HuluPlus.com/metal so you get an extended free trial and so they know that we sent you. It helps us keep the lights on and give you a better deal. One more time for the extended free trial. It's HuluPlus.com/metal.
Mark Striegel,
John Astronomy,
the Talking Metal Podcast. Coming to you from the Silver Spacecraft. I'm Bud Friendly. And now your hosts, Mark and John.
Hey, it's John Astronomy coming to you from Starbucks, New York City. Welcome to Talking Metal. Here's the co-host, Mark Striegel.
Guys, we have a great episode for you. We are excited because we're going to have an interview with the one and only Dennis Stratton, most famous for playing on that first Iron Maiden record, one of the most important records in heavy metal history, in my opinion. And, you know, I've been talking with you guys on Facebook about just how great that record is. I'm going to read a few of those comments in a minute. But first off, we want you to stay tuned, because on an upcoming episode, we have Hailstorm. Finally, we did a redo. I lost the Hailstorm interview. John went all the way to Pennsylvania, like 3 hours away, to catch up with him, and you got a new interview with them, right?
Absolutely. I met up with Lizzie and Joe, and we hung out backstage, and it was a great, great concert. Tom Kiefer was the opening act. There was a really cool thing at the end when Tom came out and did a song with Hailstorm, and just an all-in-all great event. Those guys from Hailstorm are really, really cool.
Excellent. Right now, let's get into a little Iron Maiden. This is Iron Maiden by Iron Maiden off the Iron Maiden record, with Dennis Stratton on guitar.
Thank you.
you just heard was Dennis Stratton with Iron Maiden from 1980, a little sound sample. Go buy the full track on iTunes or pick up the CD on Amazon. You guys have been corresponding with me on Facebook. I wrote, what is your favorite song off the first Iron Maiden record? And Brendan Kelly checked in, said Phantom of the Opera versus Remember Tomorrow. Don't know. That's a tough one for me. Benny Dean said, have to go with the opening track, Prowler. Running Free is a close second. And a lot of you guys checked in. I'm not going to read through all the comments now, but a lot of great, great comments. Go to our Facebook page, the Talking Metal Facebook page, and read all the comments for yourself. There's about 12 or 13 comments from you guys. Let's see, 12... I think 12 comments at this stage, with people talking about their favorite song off that first Iron Maiden record.
Very, very cool. I was very big into collecting, believe it or not, Iron Maiden pins. Remember those little circular pins?
Yeah, definitely. Me too. I actually had quite a few of them, including the Women in Uniforms pin, which was the last song, last thing actually Dennis Stratton ever did with Maiden was the video shoot for Women in Uniform. Anyways, let's get into a little classic metal right now, some Witchfinder General. This song is called Music.
That was Music by Witchfinder General all the way back to 1983, one of my favorite years.
Definitely some old school shit right there. Right now, let's go new school, but an old school sound. This is a band, not Iron Maiden, they're called Iron Man. They were at one time a Black Sabbath tribute band, they're now an original band, and they sound great. The guys over at Metal Blade have allowed us to play this track in full on Talking Metal, so here it is. Hail the Haze by Iron Man in full on Talking Metal.
Come here to placate.
That was Hell the Haze by Iron Men, a Metal Blade recording artist right here on Talking Metal.
Yeah, great stuff. The band is Iron Man, and we are going to have hopefully an interview with one of those guys coming up real soon on Talking Metal. Send us your emails at talkingmetal@yahoo.com. We may read them on the podcast. Send us a review or post us a review on iTunes under Talking Metal. We may read that on the podcast. You can comment on our Facebook page, and we may read those on the podcast. You can also stay in touch with us on Twitter at twitter.com. I've had this weird cough for the last few days. Last week, it's just like lingering. I sound like a smoker, but I'm not. It's pretty nasty. Sorry about that, guys. And Chiaki emailed in to say he was not the winner of the Striper contest. I mistakenly identified him as the winner of the Striper contest back on episode 10. Here we are, episode 432, I think.
Yes, 432. Chiaki, one of the long time listeners of Talking Metal and friend of ours. I wanted to also let you guys know that if you go to the brand new Talking Metal website, which is talkingmetal.com or talkingmetaldigital.com, you can actually post comments on our site, similar to the way comments are posted on Blabbermouth. So definitely check that out, guys.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you guys. I saw a few comments up there, but we'd love to get some more interaction with you guys on talkingmetal.com or talkingmetaldigital.com.
Gotta break in real quick talking about the website. I've been watching Hulu Plus constantly. I haven't even told you this. My favorite show is Reno 911. I know it has nothing to do with metal, but it is a really amazing show.
On Hulu Plus?
Yes, on Hulu Plus.
Yeah, great. HuluPlus.com/metal is the link you want to use to get your free 2-week trial subscription of Hulu Plus on Talking Metal. Guys, there's numerous ways you can support Talking Metal. We got the Hulu Plus thing happening. There's PayPal donations, which have been rather low lately, so we'd love to see a PayPal donation from one of you guys or more than one of you guys. And buy a T-shirt. You can also use our Amazon link. Somewhere, somebody right now is about to make a purchase on Amazon, so why not use the Talking Metal links to open your Amazon and then search your product at that point. And, you know, we get a little kickback on that. All those links and all that good stuff is located in the show notes. Excellent stuff there. Let's get into a little crossover right now, a little crossover metal punk, if you will. This is Eyes of Tomorrow by the New York band Cro-Mags. Goddamn, alarms are ringing in my head. Wake up, world, throw up through the wild dead. Look around, see the hate and the greed. Like I never picked up people dying in need. Wake up, world, things are getting serious. I'm looking at the future and it's almost too good for us. If we don't take the situation at hand, let a message of peace all throughout the land. Cause I'm looking through the eyes of tomorrow, and all I see is misery and sorrow. Desperation and despair everywhere. Reactions of a system that don't care. Politicians leading people astray. They just want more money, they don't care what it takes. Polluting the earth, destroying the environment. Building bombs of war, killing the enemy. My mind in a rage, they got me living like an animal. Defeating all the human lives, just like cannibals. Killing the planet, and everything on it. That was Eyes of Tomorrow by Cro-Mags, a New York City band that started out as hardcore, but by the time they hit the late 80s, early 90s, they were definitely a crossover band. And when I say crossover, I mean they crossed over from that hardcore punk sound to more, you know, not more of a metal sound, but they incorporated a heavy metal thrash sound in their sound. So that's where the term crossover comes from when you hear that, guys. I'm sure most of you know that already. It's when bands, punk bands or hardcore bands, start to pull in metal influences or even thrash metal influences into their sound. And the Cro-Mags was definitely one of those bands, a great New York City band from back in the day. And that song, by the way, that we just heard, Eyes of Tomorrow, I feel that that not only crosses over into thrash, but it also pulls in like some rap hip-hop sounds. So definitely crosses over into more than just metal. Anyways, right now, why don't we get into the interview?
That's great, guys. This is an interview Mark conducted just recently with Dennis Stratton.
Check it out. A little Prowler right into the interview.
Hi, Mark. This is Dennis.
Hey, Dennis. How are you?
I'm sitting in my car, so you might hear a few cars go by. I don't know.
Thanks so much for joining us on the Talking Metal podcast. I wanted to start off by seeing what you're up to now. What is currently going on with Dennis Stratton in 2013? And what's in store for 2014?
Well, it's quite strange, really, because this is, you know, the first time I've not been in a full-time band for as far as I can remember. It's given me a lot more freedom. I'm working with three bands in and around London and a duo. I've been doing a lot more work abroad in Europe, basically because of the trips I do to Italy with the Clairvoyance, which started about 6 or 7 years ago. And since going over to South Africa and Bulgaria, more people, more promoters are coming in and asking me, would I do the early years, the maiden years, the first and second album, songs that I worked on and recorded. So the more people that ask me to do it, we put a band together and we go and play, you know, and there's a few festivals through this summer that we're doing, and then I'm back in Italy in November. So it's quite strange not being involved in a full-time band, like after 15 years with Praying Mantis. So I'm enjoying a bit of freedom. I do miss the recording bit of it, but I don't know. It's a different situation at the moment. So I'm quite enjoying the freedom and also moving about, playing with different musicians, which is quite nice.
Cool. Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned the first two Iron Maiden records, where, you know, those songs on Killers, people might not realize that you were actually playing some of those songs live when you were in Iron Maiden, and obviously working on the songs before the Killers record was recorded. So so you mentioned about doing shows abroad. What about the United States? Any chance you'd ever come over here?
Well, going back to the States could be a bit of a problem because the last time I was there with Lionheart in 84, I've not been back since, only for a holiday. If a chance came up with an American promoter who wanted us to go out there like we did in South Africa and Bulgaria, and if they wanted me to go out there like I'm looking at going to Brazil early part of next year, hopefully, who knows? I'm always willing to go anywhere. You're never too old, so I'd love to go back to the States, exactly.
You mentioned the Clairvoyants earlier. Who actually plays in that band with you?
Yes, strangely enough, 6-7 years ago, I got an email from a guy called Marco Gamba. He does the Maiden fanzine, Eddie's. He's a massive Maiden fan. He's written books on Maiden. And he emailed me to go over and do an Iron Maiden convention and to play with the Clairvoyants. They're a fantastic band. They're working on their third album at the moment. They're based in Lake Como in Italy. And the main guy in the Clairvoyants is Luca. He writes all the material and he produces the album. He also plays guitar with Doro when he's not working with the Clairvoyants. Marco, Manuel, Paolo, Luca, and last but not least, Gabriel, great vocalist. He came over to Bulgaria with me and fronted the Maiden Years set that I did over in Bulgaria that was recorded and filmed. And they're a great band. As I say, I love going out there. I've been going back ever since the first convention because it's great to play to young kids, the younger generation of Maiden fans, where before I probably would have been playing to their parents or even their grandparents. I'm not sure, but it's just great, you know, to go out there and play big shows. And yeah, I love it.
Can you tell us what you were up to musically before joining Iron Maiden? I was reading your band Remus Down Boulevard did an arena tour opening for some fairly big acts, right?
Yeah, many bands before Remus. All kids growing up play with different bands. Remus Down Boulevard was probably our first really serious band. We signed to Jonathan King, which I won't speak about him after all the news. But we were signed to Quarry Management, which was Status Quo's manager, Rory Gallagher. And as soon as possible, we went straight out on the road with Status Quo in the mid-70s. We went all over Europe and Scandinavia, playing to some massive crowds. It was quite strange for us, playing at the Marquee in Wardour Street to 300, 400, 500 people. Supporting different bands, and then straight away we're in the middle of a massive arena with Quo playing to 60,000-80,000 people. It was absolutely brilliant, and brings back very good memories for playing with Quo. And unfortunately, you know, the band, we recorded an album, it never got released, and so. Basically, we were still playing. Steve and Dave Murray used to come up and watch us on a Sunday night at the Bridge House, and I think that's how they ended up asking me to join the band, because they saw me playing, they saw me singing, and that's how I got involved with Maiden.
Now, some people might not realize that you were the person who brought Clive Burr to Maiden. And you were the one who got him in the band. And that happened shortly before the first Iron Maiden record was recorded. Were you good friends with him before joining Maiden? Can you share the story of how you got him in the band?
Yeah, I knew Clive many years before Maiden. We used to do a gig in Oxford where his band used to play and Remus Down Boulevard used to play. And when I got asked to join Maiden, I was asked to go to a rehearsal studio, and when I got there wasn't a drummer, and it was just Deano and Dave Murray and Steve and the road crew. And we went through some of the guitar parts. I took a cassette home, worked on Phantom, and the funny thing was with Maiden was that they hadn't used harmony guitars, and with RDB, it was all harmony guitars because we grew up with Wishbone Ash and Capability Brown and things like that. So we love the harmony guitar techniques. And putting the harmony guitars on the songs for Maiden brought out a lot more in the songs. As you can hear on the first album, there's loads of harmonies on there. I put on too many, I think, on Phantom. Rod asked them to take some of them off because it sounded a bit like Queen or Brian May. But yeah, it was a sort of change in musical direction a little bit, just for the harmony guitars. But they never had a drummer, and I took a guy along called Johnny Richardson who was playing drums in RDB, but he suffered badly with his ears, any loud volume. And as soon as he heard the rehearsal, he said he couldn't do it, so he sort of walked out. And a couple of days later, I bumped into Clive in our local pub round by where Clive used to live at Wanstead. And I told him I'd joined Maiden, and I told him they were looking for a drummer. Was he interested in popping down with me? He said, yeah. I took him to the studio the next day, introduced him to the lads, and I'd already played him a cassette in the car, so he knew roughly, got a little bit of an edge, so I knew what we were going to play. And, he sat in for the session and played really well. And Steve and Dave and myself had a little conversation about it afterwards. And the rest is history. He came straight in. And, that's how it all started. You know, we were actually then a five-piece made up to start recording the album.
When was the last time you spoke with Clive Burr, and how did you handle the news of his death?
It was sometime near the end of summer last year. I saw Clive. I'd seen him a couple of times many years before that, but as his condition got worse, I got a call from Noel Buckley, who's one of Clive's friends. Well, he's one of all our friends. And Noel said that Clive was in a pretty bad way. So I contacted Dave Lights, who's still a really good friend of mine, and Pete Bryan, who was my guitar roadie at the time in Maiden. I contacted them two and said that it'd be nice to go and see Clive. We didn't know what to expect. We did get quite a shock. Clive was in quite of a latter stage of the condition. He could just about move his eyes. It was a sad day. It makes you realise how lucky we all are. I'd never moan anymore if I get a cold or a toothache. But we held his hand, we sat next to him, he's in the sunshine. We talked about the old days, and every now and again a little smile would come on his face. But he's in a better place now, because that is no life whatsoever. So we saw him the end of the summer last year, and then we got the call that he'd passed away. We went over and see Mimi, and when we arrived at the chapel for the cremation, Mimi asked for us, the road crew and myself and Tino Troy from Praying Mantis, would we carry the coffin in, which was quite an honour. So myself, Dave Lights, Loopy, Pete, and Tino, we all got together and carried him in. And it was a lovely service. There was a lovely guy that did the service, a vicar called the Governor, and he's a Maiden fan, which was quite nice. He told us a few funny stories in the early days, and it was a very nice day. And it was sad, but to be quite honest with you, when I saw him at the end of last summer, no one would want to be in that situation. So he's in a better place now, God bless you. And so that's that.
When Iron Maiden toured with Kiss in 1980, some people said you were actually hanging out with Kiss and their crew more than you were hanging out with the Iron Maiden guys. Is that true?
Yeah, in 1980, we were after the Judas Priest tour. We were asked to go on the Kiss tour, which was quite nice. It was Europe, again, Europe and Scandinavia. They didn't want us to support us in England because I think we had too many fans. it was strange because I toured with Quo in the 70s and other bands. I always like to get on with all the bands on the tour. I don't see there's a headlining band and support. We're all one show. There's no egos with me. I love talking to musicians. with Judas Priest. I got on really well with Glenn, and you know, I don't like friction between bands. And at the beginning of the tour, Rod made it quite clear that he didn't want any of the band mixing with Kiss. Unfortunately, that was the start of the problems with me and Rod. We started the arguments because I'm not like that sort of person. And I got to know Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley really well. I became very good friends with them while we were at the beginning of the tour. They took me out on my birthday in October in Stockholm. Paul Stanley gave me a signed fire helmet from the band. They took us out for a meal, me and Dave Lights. Great blokes, and that was a time when they had their makeup, so anyone taking pictures in the restaurant were quickly thrown out because they didn't want their identity shown. But unfortunately, Rod didn't like that. But yeah, I used to hang around them quite a bit, and also I hung around with the Maiden Road crew as well, because you just need a break from the band. And I find a road crew are more interesting when they have more of a laugh. And that's the sort of person I am. So, you know, yes, it's true, I did hang out with them quite a lot.
Yeah, there's a cool picture of you and Gene Simmons on your website. Any other Kiss-related personal stories you can share with us?
Well, the photos of Gene Simmons and myself and Paul Stanley, there's loads of photographs. A lot of them are on Facebook as well as the website. And as you can see, we all had quite a laugh. They've still got their makeup on, and yeah, as I say, I got on with them very well. I used to go and sit and watch their sound check and watching them practice the stunts with the fire eating and everything else. It was like a circus, but it was good fun, and I've got good memories from that. That, you know, would be with me forever.
When you look back at all the albums you did with Praying Mantis, which ones stand out as your favorite?
Prayer Mantis. Well, when I first went into the band, it wasn't really a band. I found that it was myself, Tino Troy, and Chris Troy. And that's how it stayed, because we never had a permanent drummer, we never had a permanent singer, and Tino used to do the keyboards on the albums, so basically it was just three of us. Whenever we toured, for 15 years, we were signed to Pony Canyon in Tokyo, and we were backwards and forwards there for 15 years. We just used to get a singer come along and do the album, and then if he did the tour, he did the tour. My favourite two albums are, out of all of them recordings, is the two we did with the same lineup. It's the only two albums we did with the same lineup, which was Bruce Bisland on drums and Tony O'Hara on vocals. And Forever in Time, and the other one I can't remember. But Mark, I imagine if you look through your Discovery, or whatever it is you have in front of you, you'll be able to tell me the name of the other album. But there's my two favourite albums.
Okay,
because
I'm going to have to look that up, check that out.
I wrote quite a few songs on them two albums, and The Best Years of My Life got voted best song in Japan, so I was quite proud of that. All the albums I think were great. It's a shame that I didn't get more recognition throughout Europe and things, but it's just getting up that next rung under the ladder. And as I say, I still see Tino and Chris doing a festival with them in October. I played with them in Holland when I headlined a tour in Amsterdam, and they were second on the bill, and I got up and played with them. We're still good mates. So, yeah, good memories again.
I've read you're a big David Coverdale fan. Do you know him personally? Have you hung out with him?
David Coverdale. Well, what can you say? The voice. I was brought up on Paul Rodgers. Anyone with a husky, bluesy, great vibrato voice, with lots of love and feeling and warmth. Paul Rodgers for me. And then, of course, David Coverdale, you know, I from the early days, Stormbringer and things like that. Yeah, Soldier of Fortune's probably my best, the best track I've heard. I'm going to have that played at my funeral, and hopefully not too soon. Yeah, what a vocalist. And I got to meet him while he was recording down at Islington with the Whitesnake boys. And I just formed Lionheart. And I went to the studio and met him, and we had a game of snooker. And then I sort of drove him mad to let Lionheart support Whitesnake on four or five gigs that they did in England. And I kept on at him, and I bumped into him in Oxford Street. We went shopping, and I gave him a cassette. And then I got a call from their management that we were doing four or five gigs with them down in St. Austell, the Coliseum in St. Austell. And off we went, and it was just fantastic because I love David's voice. And also, one of my greatest memories was that we were all staying at the same hotel, and we were at the bar having a drink, and me and Steve Mann, great guitarist, great guy, played great keyboards, and we were standing at the bar, just the three of us, and I looked through this glass panel door, and there was a piano, and I said to Dave, "Come on, David, Wine, Women and Song." And I'm not singing that. We opened the door and Steve started playing the piano, Wine, Women and Song. And David come in with his brandy and coke or his Jack and Coke. And there we were standing around a piano with him singing Wine, Women and Song. And it just made me go cold. It was just a memory I'll always remember. And it was brilliant.
Who are some of your favorite guitar players of all time?
Well, my favorite guitar players start with the Beatles, I suppose, where I started to learn to play guitar. And then going on to Jimmy Page with a whole lot of love, learning with the old record player in your bedroom and putting a big coin on the needle so you can play it, the solo over and over again, or the riff. But as time moved on... one of my greatest influences when I was early days in a teenager, in my early 20s, was Jeff Whitehorn. Jeff's with Procol Harum now, but Jeff used to play at the local pub, and I was learning to play. I must have been about 19, 20, and Jeff was playing the old Les Paul, and what a fantastic player. And I got to know him then, and we're still really good mates now. We did a few jams together at the Bridge House. Sort of many years ago. I saw him a little while ago. But as I moved on, one of my greatest influences has always been Mr. Steve Lukather. There's many, many guitarists that I love. For Speed, it's Mel Stream. For Steve Vai. For Class Speed, it's got to be Satriani. For Blues, it's got to be Gary Moore. You know, there are so many great guitarists. And the more I'm seeing the youngsters coming through now, there's more great guitarists coming out. But why Lukather gets it for me is that he plays all styles. He can do Michael Jackson. He can do any kind of rhythms, any kind of style of playing, jazz, rock, metal. Quincy Jones, the dude, with the Picaro boys on it. You know, all them years ago, what a great album. And on the solos he's doing with Randy Crawford. It's just his style. He's just good at everything, you know, and I've tried to meet him about four times, and I missed him in Los Angeles, and I missed him at a hotel in London, and I keep trying to meet up with him. I spoke to him, but I've never actually met up with him, but he gets it for me. He's class, so.
Thanks so much for joining us, Dennis. We really appreciate you speaking with us here on Talking Metal, and it's just so great to hear the stories from your past, and we wish you the best success in the future.
What you just heard was my interview with Dennis Stratton, a little Maiden going into the interview, a little Praying Mantis coming out of the interview. That song was Best Years. It was off the Forever in Time 1998 record. The other album that I think Dennis was trying to remember during the interview was Nowhere to Hide. And now let's end today's show with a little more Dennis Stratton off the 1984 album by his band Lionheart, a band that once included Les Binks from Judas Priest fame. Les is not on this record, but we'll end today's show with a track off of that record. It is called Hot Tonight.
Great, Mark. And guys, remember to use Hulu Plus. Click the links on TalkingMetal.com. Check out the show notes. And make sure to support the artists you hear on Talking Metal.
Definitely. This is Lionheart from 1984 with Hot Tonight.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.